Hello, everybody, and welcome to a new episode of the Leaders in Supply Chain podcast. I am your host, Rado Palamariu, Managing Director of Elcott Global, and I am delighted to have with us today Shekhar Natarajan, who is the Chief Supply Chain Officer for American Eagle Outfitters. He's been with the company for quite a few years. He's done all sorts of, pretty much all the different scopes and roles within supply chain with great impact. He's had a long-standing career within supply chain, has worked for several of the very large FMCG companies earlier in his career, including Coca-Cola, Pepsi, AB InBev. He also made significant stints within very large retailers as Walmart and Target. And now he's driving some extremely interesting projects within the American Eagle Outfitters supply chain, including, well, the acquisition that they've made to Quiet Logistics. They've also acquired Airterra, and they're creating a platform, a sharing platform, where logistics and supply chain can be looked across different retailers and different brands. So very excited to have you, Shekhar, and look forward to hearing more from you on this podcast.
Oh, it's an honor to be on the podcast with you, Radu.
So maybe let's start. First, tell us a little bit about your career, because you're an eclectic person. You've done a lot of different things. So maybe walk us through a little bit, and also more importantly, tell us how you made the changes that you made and why, right? Because that usually is a very interesting story.
Well, my life is a series of accidents. And so including my existence, I guess. So delighted to be talking to you. I came to the United States about like 22 years ago to take care of my brother. I had no intentions of coming to the United States. My brother had some health conditions. So basically, like, you know, I decided to come take care of him. And my choice of university was, how do I actually hop onto a Greyhound bus and go visit my brother? So coming from slums in India, it's an honor to be here in the United States, having worked for all the companies that I work for, and also going to some amazing, you know, platforms, like from education perspective. So when I graduated, this was in 2003, like, you know, I couldn't find a job for almost like 6 months. And basically I ended up working for Coca-Cola. Like, that was an accident, because I basically sent in a movie resume. I was working for the multimedia lab. And basically I said, like, you know, how do I stand apart? And created a animation of like the capabilities I bring to an organization, you know, largely like some of the educational experiences I've had and some intern experiences I've had. And that caught the attention of the head of Coke operations, one of the largest bottlers. And that was my first break. You know, my first break was an accident where I accidentally searched for the executive instead of like looking for Coca-Cola North America. Like, I looked for, like, you know, the head of like Coke operations, and Coke operations is Coca-Cola bottling. So little did I know that, you know, it's a bottling arm and not the real, the formula side of the business and the brand side of the business. So, I got through the process. It was very exciting. Like, you know, it was the best move that I've ever made in my life, primarily because beverage was going through a lot of changes at that time. And primarily, like, you know, people were making healthy choices versus carbonated soft drinks. And basically that switch actually increase the number of products in the supply chain from a pipeline perspective. And so we had to think very differently about how we store, how we package, how we basically move the product through the supply chain into the customer's shelves. Primarily, these are like small and big stores, pretty much the DSD model, you know, direct to store delivery model. And so very fortunate to have worked there, led the transformation. I got recruited out to work for PepsiCo, because some of the work that I had done during my Coke days was, and obviously, like, it was a very team effort. Like, you know, we had a very visionary leader, and I was just like implementing some of the great thoughts he had. And so we had come up with a delivery system, which kind of like made delivery process agnostic of the type of individual. Like, you know, usually delivery takes a certain person of a certain physique, usually like 200 to 250 pounds. They're able to run around the truck. They're able to like pull down the products, run it, you know, put it onto the handcart and run it into the store. So what used to take 17 touches on the road, we converted that into a single touch model, right? So we would palletize how the product needs to show up at the store. And basically, like, you know, I had like a lifting system, which was largely carbon dioxide lifts. So yeah, we were repurposing some of the assets that we already had. And we were able to like run it into the store. So that became an industry standard. So PepsiCo recruited me out, and I did not want to do anything that I did with Coca-Cola. So I started on the plant side, on the production side, you know, leading intervention programs, primarily focused on like, you know, turning around like, you know, manufacturing facilities and distribution centers, and coming up with like standards and how to like run these facilities. So I had a full gamut of like things that I did like in during my PepsiCo days, all everything from like capital planning to like distribution management to production to basically supply chain network design and management to kind of like running like, you know, region to primarily like really thinking about like the future of the PepsiCo distribution center and how do we actually move into a mixing center model? Like, so how do we create production like environment in a distribution center? So that has been the journey there. Got pretty tired of being like a beverage guy. Ended up working for Walt Disney Company, had a very interesting remit there. Like, you know, Disney was trying to build out primarily like an integrated supply chain. So primarily all of the business and the business divisions were run very autonomously and still is run very autonomously. But supply chain is one thing that could be actually centralized and consolidated, because that plush toy can be made in like 5 different factories and is kind of deleveraged. And so is basically all of the non-merch procurement. Right. So how do you kind of bring synergies across the division from a cost management perspective, but at the same time have a centralized visibility to what's going on across the enterprise? And that's also the same time when Tazreen was happening. So kind of like track and trace and kind of understanding the source of the product. How do we make the product? You know, what are the standards that are applied? How do we bring technology capabilities to kind of manage all of this was the scope of this role. So I was very excited to be part of Walt Disney Company, amazing company, a lot of great talent. And like, you know, they're really creative people. Like I really love the company a lot. And then basically like, you know, in 2015, I got recruited out to Walmart. Walmart was going through a very interesting point. Walmart in 2015, you know, basically wanted to compete with Amazon in a very differentiated way. Again, an amazing company. And I was basically like tapped to come join the next generation supply chain team. Primarily, this was the team focused on redefining the supply chain of the future for Walmart, which it's a pretty exciting role, as you can think, like, you know, thinking about all the assets in Walmart and how do we kind of like, you know, figure out how to kind of really compete. My charter then became, how do we bring the grocery home shopping business to life? Because grocery home shopping business was a money-losing business at that time, and delivery particularly was not a winning proposition. Because if you think about like deliveries, like, you know, if you're running like $100-$110 basket, being able to like do deliveries like for $5 to $7 is pretty kind of impossible, you know,
yes,
with the traditional asset-based models, and still is an impossible task. So we had to rethink the entire last mile model. So, you know, my team was responsible for bringing to life all of the logistics capabilities in the back end, like be it like pickup and delivery, and basically like, you know, how do we think about delivery in particular, like using crowdsourcing agents and associates, and primarily like, you know, like even our customers as delivery agents and kind of like the model. So the cost of doing the deliveries using crowdsourced agents was almost a third of what the cost of a typical large asset model was. Kind of that like really opened up the entire delivery program for grocery home shopping. And it's kind of the model that like basically like Walmart like now offers to most of its customers, using like its own delivery agents, like, you know, store associates doing the deliveries, and or basically crowdsourcing agents like, you know, DoorDash and others to do that. And now also they're vectoring into primarily leveraging basically like other companies and their last mile needs to be kind of like coalesced along, because for delivery, you need a lot of density. Density comes from scale. Scales comes from aggregation. Aggregation could be across multiple categories and or multiple companies. So there is where I kind of learned the whole kind of e-commerce, the need of e-commerce, and why e-commerce could be particularly the supply chain capabilities needed to kind of like perfect the e-commerce could be basically the limiting factor for most of the mid-retail. And right, so like I had the genesis of this idea post my Walmart days, you know, during my Target time, where we were kind of doing all of the re-engineering efforts there, that no one can actually win last mile game. Like, you know, even a company like Walmart has to do something like go local to primarily crack open the last mile delivery model. Now think about all the other people out there who are subscale. How do you even compete from a delivery perspective? How do you become competitive from a delivery, from a last mile capability perspective? And so that's where, like, you know, this, like, you know, the moment of kind of reflection led me creating something like, which is the Shopify of logistics. And this is a thought I had for a very long time, for almost like 6 years. You know, one could argue whether it's like 5 years or 6 years, but it's been ruminating quite a bit, like in my head. And basically, like, American Eagle gave me the opportunity to be able to really bring that vision to life. And we can talk a little bit more about that, Radu, as, like, you know, as we progress through this podcast.
No, quite fascinating. And before, so also a great transition, right? Because it's kind of, it makes so much sense, right? From your, and what you did in Walmart to what now you're doing in American Eagle, right? So I think with the acquisitions and the platforms that you're building and the marketplace of logistics that you're building, for our listeners, exactly that metaphor, that analogy of Shopify for logistics is very good. Now, before we go into the details and how it's working out and all of that, I want to ask a very investment related question, right, I guess, and which is, how did you convince the CEO of American Eagle, right? Because that there's a big chunk, and we keep preaching, and we have a book coming out that also is one of the key messages, I hope, from the book will be that supply chain professionals should be very good storytellers, influencers, right, presenters, to get their case across, right? So you seem to have, you know, the American Eagle has approved some significant acquisitions within logistics and supply chain space, right? We will talk about more about it, right? But how did you convince the CEO to do that? That's my key question.
Well, like, you know, see, as you probably could tell, like, my life has been the product of basically some of the re-engineering efforts those companies were seeking to do, right? With Coke, it was about kind of transforming the delivery system. With PepsiCo, it was kind of reimagining entire distribution system, right? And with basically like Walmart, it was about convincing people to break away from like having like asset heavy models that Walmart is so used to having into an asset like model, right? And like convincing them that basically like Uber and Uber like models, where you are actually handing over deliveries of like groceries, which is so close to your heart and so important, like, you know, particularly like, you know, US has been plagued with a lot of like controversial things like, you know, Tylenol and poisoning and other things. So there's a lot of resistance in terms of like getting people to like kind of adapt the new process. Now, like, you know, grocery and getting delivered using like crowdsource agents is almost like the second nature, right? And people like, you know, go to India, go to basically any part of the world, like it just happens naturally, even like with like Walmart. So I think like having the ability to paint a vision, and the most important thing that is really critical for all executives to know is, it's not just the vision which is important, it is the execution of that vision which is really critical, and kind of landing some immediate wins, like kind of showing the proof points that basically, like, you know, a vision can be achieved, right? So that has been the kind of the 20 years of my life, you know, I've been really trained to think that way, trained to operate that way, be a multilingual person within an organization, talk that IT talk the business talk, talk the finance talk, basically talk the supply chain talk, you know, within the teams, and being able to, like, you know, really influence up and down. And like, not a lot of my life has been, you know, it's not all like successes, like, you know, you learn from your failures. There were times when basically, like, you know, things were never sold the way it should have been sold. You know, we had to do a restart and a reboot and some of these things. And so as you go through this, you know, kind of maturity curve, you end up like honing on these kinds of skills, right? That's why I said my life is a series of accidents. I never planned to be in these companies. I ended up being in those companies. You know, I never planned to basically like lead like transformation initiatives. I was actually part of the transformation initiatives, maybe because like the way I think, you know, I was never trained to be a change agent, but I ended up being one. And basically, like, you know, with American Eagle, I was very, very fortunate. You know, it was not just the CEO, it was also our CFO, it was also our COO, it was the board, it was Jay Schottenstein who saw this vision, right? They saw this vision and they said, like, you know, like logistics is going to be a competitive advantage for the company. But hyperscale logistics would be a competitive advantage, not just a logistics capability, right? And so how do you get to a hyperscale? Well, if a company like Walmart cannot get to hyperscale with its own supply chains, let alone everyone else is going to be able to get to the hyperscale supply chains all by themselves, right? And so if a company like Walmart is not able to break the code on the last mile and has to basically like solicit like crowdsource agents, customers, associates, like, you know, mind you, Walmart has like 1.4 million associates who are working in the stores. Right? It has 150 million customers who walk through the front door, right? And so these are all publicly available stats. And so even a company like Walmart trying to figure out like how to make the last mile economics work, like we are all like mere mortals in the mid-retail, yes. Right? So I think the provocation was, hey, like, you know, there's something unique here. This could be a business. And so we had to take the approach of kind of like showing to the board, showing to the execs, the other execs in the company, that this vision can be realized. It is basically kind of enhancing the profit pictures of basically like American Eagle. This can turn into a business all by itself. And we had to put like points on the board to be able to kind of like bring all of this to life. So we ended up piloting the concept with Quiet Logistics. We saw the benefit with Quiet Logistics. The benefit for Quiet Logistics was amazing. We were the first company, and we are still the only company, Radu, to kind of go out on the media to be able to go say that we are leveraging our delivery expenses year over year, spending less money every year than the prior year, when the market has actually gone up like 1,100 basis points the other direction. The market has just seen price increases today of 1,100 basis points. So 11% of price went up in a parcel delivery system. We were able to leverage our delivery by 300 basis points. We were able to actually reduce the time it took for actually the end deliveries to be a day and a half faster than everyone else. We were able to basically like reduce the miles that the parcel traveled by 2.5 billion parcel miles. Right, we were the only company which could basically say like we were actually putting profit, planet, and a purpose all on the same level playing field. And it was built on this model of sharing, because like we couldn't do it ourselves, we need others to come collaborate with us. And so this the rallying cry became open and sharing. And if my question to the board, my question to the CEO, my question to all of the execs within our company was, if American Eagle can get these kinds of benefits, think about all the others, if they were able to share, how great it would be to convert a cost center into a profit center for every company. And how great would it be to basically that if everyone stayed competitive and everyone could compete on the core of what they really do, which is the product itself, right? You know, we are almost like, it's a myth for us to think that we can compete on the supply chain and we could forget the products. We got to really, the customer's really buying American Eagle jeans for the brand it stands for, not for the brown boxes or for the bag of like, you know, package that showed up at your doorstep. You know, there's no differentiation in that. The differentiation really lies in the product, the aesthetics, the fabric, the fit, everything that actually makes us very unique. And so we were able to convince the board. You know, it's a wonderfully like progressive board. Like we made a lot of unique bets. It has a history of innovation, and they basically like bought into the vision. And you know, we were able to like successfully kind of transact with these companies to buy them and basically build out and incubate a business within our business, pretty much.
Mm-hmm. No, and to give a bit of more context for those listeners that maybe don't know the whole details. I mean, even myself, so I'll need you to complement my sharing. But so American Eagle bought Quiet for Everybody, bought Quiet Logistics, right? So Quiet Logistics is a, if my understanding is correct, an in-market fulfillment services type of a company, logistics company. And then they also bought AirTerra, which is kind of a zone skipping service to retailers, right? It's also used for the parcel, is mostly done for the parcels, right? And then you have this too, and then you're also building the soft assets, right? All the different platforms but which have to do with operating systems, inventory, and so on. So then it's kind of an end-to-end almost supply chain solution that you can share with others. So compliment that picture if I got it wrong, Shekhar, or if there's some more things to add.
No, you actually have, you know, completely nailed it. So on the spectrum of sharing, right? Like, you know, so if you think about like what makes Amazon and Walmart the companies they are, and I had a wonderful chat with one of the leaders who actually leads and is part of Reliance Group. And basically, like, you know, what he mentioned was like pretty amazing and remarkable. So India is going to be $11 trillion like a GDP country, right? And half their costs are going to be supply chain costs. Now, like, supply chain costs include the product cost, okay? So it's a product and the logistics cost. And so India is thinking about basically like, how do we create a competitive, like, you know, marketplace based on anchoring on logistics? Because if logistics basically primarily is the half the expenses, how do you enable like a friction-free commerce for all the different, like, you know, mom and pops out there, right? So there is a lot of parallels and correlation there. And so if you think about like what like makes Walmart and Amazon the company they are, it's the supply chain. It's largely a supply chain company enabling a marketplace. You know, they're not the other way around, right? So, and these are like private networks, right? So they have like built-in scale. You know, just for context, American Eagle sells 225 million units a year. Walmart does about 50 billion units a year. So what American Eagle does in a year is Walmart doing in half a day, or like, sorry, a day and a half. And Amazon does it in half a day, okay? Mm-hmm. So the scale is like almost like 250 to one, okay? So, you know, so basically those private networks are like able to like, you know, take on all the assets they need. Like, you know, you like if you just go through basically like Walmart and its distribution capabilities, about like 200 odd distribution centers of different kind, about like 5,400 stores of different sizes. And they have like their own private fleet. They have their own like trucks. They have their own like, you know, sortation capability. They have their own fulfillment centers. They have their own delivery agents. And primarily like, you know, they could own the network because of the volume that people have, right? And so the other retailers, like say, for example, like, you know, let's take, for example, American Eagle. American Eagle has like two distribution centers, two distribution centers, okay? So you cannot get to the edge of the country where really the population is for delivering e-commerce in a very efficient way from the two distribution center model. People typically tend to use the stores, but stores are a proxy for a very bad fulfillment capability. Because in a store, like, you know, it's really 4,000 square feet. In 4,000 square feet, you cannot put 100,000 SKUs, and you end up basically like not maximizing that hyperlocal like inventory which is available. It is supposed to be like local inventory for local consumption, ends up being like a national inventory. Like, you know, that product which is in LA is very unique, and the customer is really requesting that item in New Jersey. So basically, that item gets like shipped across the country, right? So that's what happens like in a ship from store model, pretty much. So we wanted to kind of look at the end-to-end spectrum of the supply chain and create a public version, right? So what can you share in the public version? Well, like we're already, like, you know, we've already outsourced the factories. Like none of the retailers, particularly the apparel retailers, they don't own the factories. It's all like run by the same factory. So Lululemon is made in the same factory as AD is. And it's the same factory where Athleta is made, right? After that, no one tends to share most of the things in common. They don't share basically the consolidators. They don't share the ships, like, you know, or the containers which actually ride on the ships. They don't share the distribution centers. They don't share basically the over-the-road transportation. They don't share the transloaders. They don't share the distribution centers. And they definitely don't share this edge fulfillment centers, right? And all of the technology associated with it. So what we are trying to do is basically make every one of our workflows, which is obviously how we do the business today, like, you know, we kind of like make the product and take it all the way to the doorstep, and we collected assets and we collected basically capabilities along the way. Now we are open sourcing all of those, every step of the world, right? So we are trying to take like what happened in the closed network, which is a single tenancy model, and taking every step of the workflow and making it open source. That way it becomes multi-tenancy every step of the way.
Yes.
Right. And so that is essentially what we are trying to do. So our game is to be able to get to similar scale without having to make similar investments.
Yeah.
Right. And so it is also tapping into all of the available capacity across all of these workflows, across counter seasonal products. right? So the benefit of like having worked for all these companies, and like as I said, like, you know, my life is a series of accidents. You know, little did I know, like 20 years later is what I'm going to be doing today. I work for a beverage company. We have something called 100 Days of Summer in Pepsi, right? If you basically look at the boots sell significantly in large quantities during September and February. If you take basically like, you know, electronics basically come out like, you know, during this season, September, October, November, right? When they really announce and basically are trying to capitalize on the Christmas sales. And if you take basically the apparel industry, the peak is during like November and back to school season. And if you take basically the beer companies, based on like the profile of basically the games that we have, it's usually like December, January, and February. That's like, and Super Bowl day is the biggest sales for beers, pretty much, along with chips. So all these businesses have counter seasonal nature to them. So it is about matching all these different, you know, categories of products and using a very efficient way to open source them and building a network, which basically like brings access and scale closer to the doorstep. And that's essentially what we're trying to do.
And I mean, and of course, there's some huge benefits from a utilization linked to, of course, sustainability. You mentioned some mind-blowing numbers, Russell, in terms of the reduction, right, of how many miles, emissions, and all of the good stuff that would happen. Now, playing a little bit devil's advocate on the other side, if I'm a direct competitor on the product, right, so if I'm an apparel brand, or I don't know, I make jeans as well, let's say, let's not name them, but and then I use the open platform, right? I've seen this in other industries, right? We work in shipping, for example, and I remember vividly being at a shipping conference, and there was one speaker much older than I am and 30, 40 years in the industry. And he said, the industry will start collaborating if we get attacked by aliens, because then we have a common enemy. And that's when the industry will collaborate. So that was in shipping. There's some things that have changed, but bottom line, what I'm trying to say is there is a certain, let's say, reluctance among competitors to share or collaborate too much, right? So I guess if I sell jeans and then I'm using your platform, for example, right, I'm guessing that somebody might think, okay, but how do I make sure that my product also reaches my customer and you don't get priority over mine or something like that? So how do you address this type of potential challenge?
Yeah, like, you know, that's a great question. So if you think about, like, you know, when I joined American Eagle, they, like, you know, people said, hey, like, you own supply chain. And I said, great. And I was like, so excited, you know, like, you know, you basically own end-to-end supply chain and all that stuff. So, and I began to look at like the vastness of the supply chain and like, you know, the breadth of the scope and the responsibility I had. And I quickly figured that we only control the distribution center, right? We don't own the factory. Like, as I said, we don't own the transloaders and the consolidators. We don't own Maersk. We don't own JB Hunt of the world, over the road guys. We don't own CBRE and JLL and basically Prologis, which primarily like are the infrastructure providers. Sometimes the company ends up putting like a distribution center in the middle of the country. Like, yes, you get to own the box. You get to own the equipment within the box. Maybe like, you know, 200 associates who actually work the building, but you don't own the temp agency, which is absolutely needed during the peak. And then basically you definitely don't own the FedEx and the UPSs, and you don't own the mall. On this end-to-end spectrum, like, it's pretty jarring to know that you really don't have any control on anything. Right. And so, and yep, if you look at the way the world has moved, there's been a fragmentation on the supply side. So there are very few powerful players who control the pricing action and the opaqueness of the market, right? Like, take parcel industry in US, for example, it's managed and controlled by FedEx and UPS. Take basically like over the road carrier, there are a handful of players. Take the ocean carriers, there are a handful of players. Take basically the distribution center assets management, like, you know, there are a few companies. So power is concentrated within a few hands. And there are like literally thousands of retailers who basically have no control.
Yeah.
And when people talk about like controlling the supply chain to deliver customer experience, I don't know what they're talking about. Absolutely don't. You know, because like, you know, you simply don't have the leverage in the market. So logistics was like a buyer's market. Now it is a seller's market. And so basically, like, you know, that's one thing that basically, like, you know, I end up like telling like every one of my friends in retail that, like, you know, you absolutely have no control on the industry. And the second thing is, what makes us very unique is the product. And we have really given up the control of the product. The same factory is making the smoothies Airy product as is like Lululemon's, right? So product is what the customers are really paying us. They're not going to our websites and saying, oh, wow, like, you know, I'm going to go buy this because like American Eagle has like this amazing delivery program where everything comes in a beautiful little like bag to my doorstep. And the customer, like, you know, gets the same bag as another company. And they are getting it like, you know, willy-nilly from any point in time. And no one is able to give a very reliable, predictable delivery offering. Everyone says today, like 5 to 7 days on their website. Is it 5? Is it 6? Is it 7? Is it 2? Is it 3? No one knows, right? Mm-hmm. So the differentiation is really at the product level, and we've given up the control on the product as well. Mm-hmm. And so basically, like, you know, for us, it is about finding people who believe in our vision, finding people that basically have come to realize that, hey, like if Coke and Pepsi are only competing on their formula, which is very different, they don't own the reservoirs, which actually, like, you know, is bringing the water into the system. Like Coke basically is 99% water with like sugar and a formula. Mm. And so is Pepsi, right? Both those companies did not end up building their reservoirs, did not end up building their electric grids, did not end up building basically like, you know, the entire, you know, sophisticated, like, you know, capabilities. They have largely stayed within the realm of their capabilities, which is, I'm going to package this, I'm going to formulate, you know, create a formula for this, and I'm going to offer the customers like different offerings so that they could consume more and more with us. So they have figured that, you know, like, you know, when you're competing, you don't have to compete on all the dimensions that make you unique on the value chain. The only things which matter are product related. And so that is the same concept we are extending to the supply chain. Obviously, like, you know, we are providing neutrality, like, you know, so this company that we have, that we bought, and we are assimilating within the American Eagle framework, is an independent entity. It has its own independent structure. There's a president of the company, there's technology. We don't use the same backend services. We basically like have an arm's length agreement between American Eagle. So American Eagle is a customer to the Quiet Platforms, right? It is not in the same entity. And primarily, like, you know, all the capabilities that were built in a, you know, American Eagle have been transferred over to the new entity, right? Mm-hmm. So the new entity has a neutrality in terms of how it kind of operates and the way it operates. So when we go through the exercise of like basically looking at the demand, kind of looking at the labor needed to kind of run some of these facilities, we have a holistic forecast. We don't basically look at it by brand and say like American Eagle needs to get a higher priority, so I'm going to put like more labor against it. Well, if I put more labor against that plan, the P&L of American Eagle is going to get impacted because eventually like our P&L gets consolidated. So like trying to prioritize an over like, you know, service American Eagle is going to be detrimental for the new entity. So we've created like all these incentive mechanisms and, you know, capabilities, and basically the way the metrics are kind of set up, they service American Eagle as a customer. So that's the other thing that we did, right? And the backend systems are all different. And so there's no scope for any of this data sharing and other things. So if you look at like, you know, your example, right? You know, we are, you know, we have like footwear company. We are not in the business of footwear. You know, we are not in the business of bridal wear. Mm-hmm. We are not in the business of like, American Eagle has a very specific kind of like group of people that we service. It is a 15 to 25 year old for the American Eagle products. And for Airy, it's kind of like, you know, we are in the intimate wear business. And so we have a very unique demographic. And 99.5% of the customers don't even like, you know, companies don't even overlap with us. Yeah. And fashion is a, you know, is the other thing is fashion is a kind of a segment where, you know, even if you had like, you know, product intelligence, like, so to say, right? by the time you basically manufacture, bring it here and basically try to sell it, it's already obsolete. Because it's a fashion model. It's a fashion-based product, right? And so basically, like, you know, we've created all kinds of checks and balances between the two companies to be able to, like, kind of really create that arm's length neutrality kind of model. But at the holistic level, we are a retailer. We are not another 3PL. We are another retailer who understands retail business inside out, from the time the product is made and from the factories to the time basically it gets to the doorstep. And we are using our knowledge to disrupt ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Someone doesn't come and disrupt us. Mm-hmm. And someone doesn't come and disrupt the industry. And someone doesn't annihilate the industry because we are super uncompetitive, because we're all competing for things that really don't matter.
Yes. Well, this was a very good answer, and I'm hoping many people will listen. I think it's a common misconception, right? That let's not collaborate because ultimately it's gonna affect our business somehow or not. It's actually, collaboration is key. Collaboration, in my view, is probably the only way in which we're gonna be sustainable and achieve the sustainability goals that we've achieved. And supply chain is at the core of that. So I really wish you a very successful journey ahead, Shekhar. And as a way of closure of this podcast, I have one final question for you, which is, looking back at your series of accidents, right, in your career, what would be one or two principles that helped you the most that you want to share, maybe with a younger side of our audience? What would be one or two pieces of advice for a successful career?
I think dogged persistence. And like, as I said, like, my life is a series of accidents, including me visiting here. Radu, I come from slums in India, where access to education, paying for funerals, you know, having mobility and, like, you know, having even basic necessities was a big deal. Like, you know, I lived in a house with, like, one room, which was also the kitchen, which is also basically where we were all sleeping. And we had, like, 8 people in the house. Me, my brothers, my grandmother, my 2 aunts, my dad, and my mom. And, like, we had a dog too. Like, you know, that would make it 9, actually. So, you know, coming here, I felt like, you know, basically America is, like, probably one of the greatest lands out there, the greatest countries out there, which creates an opportunity for everyone who puts their mind to it. And so what America has done to me, from leveling the playing field, it didn't matter who I was, it didn't matter how I looked, it didn't matter where I came from. It gave me an opportunity to work for some of the best companies. People have, like, you know, given me immense support. And so I tell myself, what do I have to lose? I came to the United States with $34 in my pocket. $34 in my pocket. And I have nothing to lose in my life if I go back to $34 in my pocket. And so that is where I think, like, if you feel liberated that basically, like, you have nothing to lose and you have dogged persistence, that is the recipe for success. That's number one that you need. The second one that you absolutely need is basically, you know, for the first 17 years of my life, you know, I was like on a wild goose chase. So I was trying to climb up the corporate ladder. I was trying to basically figure out, like, you know, like, how to get to my next level, how to make a little bit more money, how to get a little bit more title and all that stuff. And then 2017, something remarkable happened with me. Like, I had to go spend time with my mom. You know, I had to take a sabbatical. And at that time, you know, I was asking the purpose of my life. And I figured when I asked the question, like, what is my life's purpose? And why am I basically, like, you know, in the place where I am? The answer came to me that I was basically trying to show people that I was successful, but I was not basically, like, trying to make myself excellent in what I do. And when I flipped that thinking over and said, like, you know, it doesn't really matter, like, you know, whether people think I am successful or not, I just need to be, like, satisfied internally that I'm excelling every day, because it's about, like, it's about making yourself better every day. And it's a routine, you know, it's a routine that you got to make yourself better every day. Then, you know, like, everything is feasible and possible. It was my dream to basically build a supply chain company within a company and basically make it more like valuable than the core business. Everyone talks about converting a cost center into a profit center. Well, like, you know, we are probably going to be creating a very valuable company within American Eagle, which happens to be not the core business, which is like retail, but it is going to be logistics. And so, like, my 2 cents to everyone is, like, don't chase success because you want people to know that you're successful. Be successful because you want to be successful in your life. And that comes through excellence, and that comes through basically repeated, like kind of working on yourself repeatedly, like, you know, from a personal, a professional, and basically like an experiential basis. So those are the two kind of like advice I would give, like dogged persistence and make yourself better every day, not for others, just for yourself.
Love it. Now, Shekhar, this was wide-ranging, super engaging, full of examples. Loved it, man. So thanks a lot for joining us today. Wishing you, you know, continued little bit of improvement every day. It adds up, and I think in a couple of years I'm really curious to see what you build and how big it gets within the American Eagle and the ecosystem that you're building. Wishing you all the success there, and thanks again for joining us and for your time.
Thank you, Radu.
Super. Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you like what you heard, be sure to go to www.elcotglobal.com and click the podcast button for all the show notes of the interview. Also, subscribe to our mailing list to get our latest updates first. If you're listening through a streaming platform like iTunes, Spotify, or Stitcher, we would appreciate a kind review. 5-star works best to keep us going and our production team happy. And of course, share it with your friends. I'm most active on LinkedIn, so do feel free to follow me. And if you have any suggestions on what to do and who to invite next, don't hesitate to drop me a note. And if you're looking to hire top executives in supply chain or transform your business, of course, contact us as well to find out how we can help.